are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Get your daily news fix by listening to The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. It's like The Daily Show, but it's for your ears. Studies show that ears are great for listening, and who are we to deny science? Trevor Noah and the world's fakest news team tackle the biggest stories in news, politics, and pop culture. Subscribe to The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition, for highlights and extended interviews. Available Tuesday through Friday mornings on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your ears on a podcast.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, September 4th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Brett Kavanaugh hearings begin. Democrats call for a delay, an adjournment, or whatever, on a late document dump by the Republicans. Meanwhile, John McCain's Republican replacement soon to be announced. Thank you, John McCain. Trump teeing up the firing of Jeff Sessions et al. During the lame deck session. Dems polling lead increases. Legal immigrants dropping from SNAP for fear of deportation. National prison strike continues. Prison officials now placing protesters in solitary and death row. Steve Bannon sadly booted from the New Yorker Festival. Milo Yiannopoulos sadly booted from Politicon. And some people are burning their socks because black people. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are all back from our holiday. With us from left to right, not on a political spectrum, but simply in terms of who I see in front of me, Matt, Jamie, Brendan, and Michael. Although maybe on a, who knows, on a political, it's tough to.
It's possible.
Things, a lot of things change over the course of 8 days, folks. The Brett Kavanaugh hearings have begun in earnest. What we're going to try and do today is catch up on a couple of things that we obviously missed during the break. Not much. I don't want to spend too much time on this. In fact, though, let's just briefly, let's get this John McCain thing out of the way. Do you have that tweet by Charlie Pierce? Just pull that up. So I don't think there's much confusion amongst our listeners as to what my perspective is on John McCain. I don't, I was going to say I don't wish death on anyone, but that's also a lie. That's not true. I did not feel strongly about John McCain's situation one way or another. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't particularly happy about it. I wasn't necessarily saddened about it. I have a policy that if I know someone from via their public life, that's the only thing I measure them against. And I don't really care what John McCain was like as a man. I'm sure people thought maybe in his life that he was a nice man. It's possible some didn't. I don't know. Do I think he's a war hero? Sure. There was also a lot of other guys who were in prison in Vietnam who we never talk about and we don't pay homage to when they pass away. Many of them have. You've never heard their names. We certainly have never talked about it. So I don't care about that. Charlie Pierce wrote a tweet, and I do actually like Charlie Pierce, and I do care about him, and I like what he does publicly. But he had this to say: "Am a touch sick of the lefty hot takes by those by which those of us who were moved to a kind of optimism by the funeral Saturday have forgotten the crimes of the Bush administration, the crime that was Vietnam. I fortunately was out of touch enough that I don't know exactly what he's referring to. And look, I have no problem with people watching an event and getting optimistic and this and that, whatever. But here's the part that I have an issue with when it comes to John McCain. So Charlie Pierce wrote, house is on fire, don't care who brings a hose. I got to say, I agree with that sentiment. The problem is, John McCain did not bring a hose. John McCain got dressed up in the fireman's outfit, and he walked, and he said, the house is burning, and I'm totally against it. And it should stop burning. But he left the hose in the truck. He left the hose, and in fact, I would say he left the hose in the truck by A, not resigning his position and forcing a special election this November. He could have done that. He could have done that, but he didn't. He specifically chose to allow the governor of Arizona to appoint a Republican. The governor of Arizona has no option but to appoint a Republican. That Republican will act in the same way that either John McCain did, but for his one vote against repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And yes, good for him on that vote. It also saved the Republican Party because we're seeing the dissembly of the Affordable Care Act as we speak by executive actions. But had that vote taken place, the Senate probably would have been gone as easily as the House is, or one anticipates the House might go right now. Because you would have a bunch of 26-year-olds and 25-year-olds and 24-year-olds and 23-year-olds and 22-year-olds getting kicked off their health insurance. You would have stories every day of people with pre-existing conditions, of cancer, who can't get health coverage. That's what would have happened. So maybe John McCain did it because he cared about those people. Maybe he did it because he wanted to maintain the integrity of the Republican Party. Whatever. I'm happy for that vote. But let's not get carried away here. The House is not on fire because the Affordable Care Act was almost repealed. To the extent that the House is on fire when Charlie Pierce says that, it is because you have the incredible corruption of the Trump administration. You have these reactionary right-wing judges. You have a conservative movement that's out of control. And John McCain had within his ability to actually turn that hose on. And that was to resign his seat and force a special election in November. And he chose not to do that. And surely if I'm aware of this, he must have been. And then since we're talking about a house on fire, since we're talking about this notion of his funeral showing that people can rise above partisanship and polarization and come together, if anyone can name for me in the history of my life, going back a half a century, a more polarizing figure who was appointed, named vice president nominee than Sarah Palin, I want to hear about it. In fact, if anyone could do so in the history of the country, I imagine probably back like early 1900s, late 1800s, somebody, you know, we're talking around the Civil War, perhaps too. Maybe there may have been a reconstruction.
Tense time.
But let's just say in the past 100 years, if someone can name a more polarizing figure than Sarah Palin, who was named vice presidential nominee for more craven reasons, maybe even one less qualified to run the country than Sarah Palin. And certainly, if anybody could name a single figure out there who provided the model for Donald Trump more than Sarah Palin. I want to hear about it. So we can talk about that one decision he made on the campaign to pull that microphone away from that lunatic lady who could have said anything at that point. And even if you have problems with his phrasing, no, he's a good American. You know, like as if he was a Muslim, he wouldn't. It doesn't matter. That was a decent thing to do. That was dwarfed. That decision in that moment was dwarfed by the decision of elevating Sarah Palin and everything she stood for. And if, like, the amount of times I saw clips of that moment, as opposed to the moment that Sarah Palin got on stage at the RNC, it's ridiculous. Because I'm sorry, there's just simply no equivalence. Because Sarah Palin went on to make a living off of saying that that Barack Obama was not an American, and spawned an entire industry around that. So please, I mean, honestly, give me a break.
He's also the co-producer of Meghan McCain.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry. Look, hey, I just wanted to give a little bit.
I have got to see where my kids end up before I will pass judgment on that. But in this instance,
I don't think it's possible we get there.
Who knows?
Yeah. Whoa.
But the bottom line is, if John McCain certainly had it in his ability to turn on that fire hose, and if anybody had more responsibility for unleashing the forces that brought us Donald Trump than John McCain, I'm curious to hear about it. I mean, and I'm talking about the forces that predate when Trump got in the race. So, you know, Well, like I say, I do wish death on some people. I mean, I was pretty happy about Antonin Scalia passing away. But
that was great.
But in this instance, like, there is a value to holding people to account even after they die, even when they die. Like, there is a value to that. And I definitely get the idea of taking that fire hose from anybody who's bringing a hose. But, you know, water needs to be coming out of it. And it's not just cosplay. It needs to be real.
Well, and he's not just referring to McCain bringing the fire hose. I think what he's referring to is this moment between the Obamas and the Bushes where Bush hands Michelle a candy and it kind of went viral. And everyone sort of, like, look at us come together and as a country sort of thing. And I feel like that just shows, like, people kind of want a bedtime story about all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sweet moment. Great. Somebody gave somebody a piece of candy.
But you're saying something really crucial, which is that even by the metrics of, like, the resistance, I'll just use that term, John McCain and Jeff Flake, let's add him, right? We've said this months ago. They could say, we're not changing who we are ideologically, blah, 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 but we're going to caucus with Democrats as independents till the midterms, and we're going to have investigations, and we're going to slow the business because, and they could say because of Russia, because of every Rick Wilson approved, you know, concern and talking point. So by those metrics, it's ridiculous. The context that especially McCain with Sarah Palin set up, but frankly, all of these people set up through everything from the financial meltdown to the invasion of Iraq. And I just can't, I know that everybody has said this and I won't dwell on it, but, like, my God, the guy's just endless provoking of any type of military action ever available.
Right.
How could that be forgotten?
Well, look, you know? Yes. I mean, and look, I just, there's two different classes of criticism here, right? One
right.
is the, and the guy has a record, that record's going to live on. And, you know, people should examine that record. But specifically in regards to justifying it because of the moment we're in, you got to hold that guy accountable. And the part of the reason why it's not been held accountable is because Democrats have not done this either. Democrats, you know, like,
sure.
like literally elected Democrats should have held Paul Ryan to account. That should have been a strategy during the election. That would have stopped Donald Trump.
No, you're absolutely right.
All that and more. Yeah.
And the propriety and the rehabilitation and sort of burnishing of someone's image after they die is, I think, for a political figure like him, it benefits those in power.
Of course.
Inherently conservative. And like, people are like, oh, how dare you? How dare you speak ill of the dead? He didn't care how many people died in Iraq or Vietnam.
He cheered to bomb Iran. Like,
bomb, literally, Iran.
It was a joke to him.
Well, and actually, so, I think that's something that's changed since, say, when Reagan died, and good riddance to all that.
I think, all I can say is that I'm glad it happened during our vacation. Hey, support for today's show comes from Brooklyn. I have, since the last time I've read this copy, I have gotten another pair of Brooklyn and sheets. Not a pair. What do you call that?
Set
of Brooklyn and sheets, and I love them. And, well, let me get to the copy first. But they give you a packet of laundry detergent. And I have to admit, on the first time I got it, I did not use the laundry detergent they give you. But it's like, wash this with this detergent first time. And man, oh man, soft as a baby's bottom, those sheets. Named the winner of the best line online bedding category by Good Housekeeping, Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world with over 20,000 five-star reviews. Their mission, to bring five-star hotel quality sheets to everyday life, offering luxury sheets without the luxury markup. The method, eliminate the middleman. There you go. From design to manufacturing to customer service and beyond, no middle men or women. Talk about your new sheets. I will say this. I mean, I now have five different pairs, sets, four different sets of Brooklinen sheets. That is the advantage of, that's the one there upside of getting separated, changing your marital status. More opportunity to get more sheets.
Freedom.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. You don't like the cool, crisp type? Well, then, too bad, because I'm going to get them anyways because they have different types of
Sam going his own way.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. I've said that multiple times now. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer for just the Majority Report listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code majority at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so sure you're going to love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. Only way to get $20 off and free shipping, use the promo code majority at brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com, promo code majority. Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever. I am not kidding. Folks, the other way that I keep up with my new lifestyle, well, we did this even when we were together, but Blue Apron has a mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. You can make dinner in as little as 20 minutes with quick and easy recipe options and perfectly portioned ingredients delivered right to your door. No meal planning or shopping required. Back to school has never been easier. Back to school has been a little bit challenging for me this year. I'm not going to lie. And Blue Apron is going to make it significantly easier for me to make sure that the kids don't just eat, you know, like fish sticks and hot dogs. And this month, you can take advantage of Blue Apron's exciting September partnerships with chef-designed Bob's Burgers. What?
Seriously?
I'm not kidding. They have chef-designed Bob's Burgers inspired in Whole 30 approved recipes. Holy cow. I didn't even realize that.
Nice synchronicity.
Should
there.
I do the Hugo voice?
I would.
I don't know. I don't know if Blue Aprons are going to get, maybe we'll get like an extra bump on this ad spot.
Right.
I get Bob's Burgers. I get Blue Apron twice a week. You can get it up to, I think, four times a week. Totally health inspector improved. Approved. Check out this week's menu. Get your first three meals free at blueapron.com/majority. That's blueapron.com/majority. Get your first three meals free. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. All right, so let's get into these hearings. Today, I don't know how far into the hearings they'll get today. But the way this works is they open up with statements from all the committee chairs, or I should say members of the Judiciary Committee. Gives you a little bit of insight to as to where this is going. Largely a waste of time. However, what we saw the Democrats do, and it's good. I mean, the key here, remember, is convincing folks like Manchin, McCaskill, Doug Jones,
Heidkamp,
and Donnelly to vote against Kavanaugh. And then to go on to deal with a Collins or Murkowski, but it is looking like their reports are that Collins had basically signed off on Kavanaugh before he was even nominated. That somebody she gave buy-in. This is secondhand reporting. I don't know how accurate it is. I do know there's a fund that has almost $250,000 now that has been pledged to be spent against Collins in Maine if she votes for Kavanaugh. I imagine there's a lot more money coming from another direction to offset that. But here are the Democrats making their first attempt. And again, this is, I think, smart in the context of those red state senators, Democrats, because they're making a non-ideological argument, which is ultimately that we don't have enough documents on this guy. But here is the start. And this is a long clip where the Democrats try and postpone the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. About 40,000 pages of documents were delivered to Democratic senators last night. Even Matt Leck could not read that quickly. Here's the way the committee hearing started, and you're going to hear a lot of protesters in the background as well.
There you go. Senator Chuck Grassley, let's listen in.
On the nomination of
Mr. Chairman
Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed.
This is Kamala Harris.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome to Judge Kavanaugh.
We have not been given an opportunity to have a meaningful hearing on the nominee.
There are two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman,
Judge
we received 42,000 documents that we haven't
and
been
everyone
able
else joining
to review
us
last
today.
Night, and we believe this hearing should
be
postponed.
I know this is an exciting day for all of you here, and you're
that's
right.
Klobuchar.
Mr. Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
This is Blumenthal.
From Judge Kavanaugh later this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn. Mr. Chairman, we have been denied real access to the documents we need to advise.
Mr. Chairman, regular order is called for.
Which turns this hearing into a charade and a mockery of our norms.
Well,
and Mr. Chairman, I therefore move to adjourn this hearing.
Okay.
And that's protesters. Pause it. Now, you got to appreciate Kavanaugh at this point. It's just like he is just telling himself over and over again, look like a good guy. 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 There is no doubt in my mind that his media preparers it basically told him, like, in these situations, just repeat this mantra. Maybe it's not like look like a good guy. It's just like, you know, name, say the name of your kids over and over again or something to that effect. And basically what's happening here is the Democrats want the hearing stopped because these documents were delivered so late. Now, also note that even with the delivery of these documents, there are still hundreds of thousands of extant documents. This guy was in the Bush administration for an extended period of time. None of those documents are being released. And it's completely, to say norms sounds silly, but this is what...
those should be available for the public, and the idea that the Congress can't even see them is pretty out there, it seems like.
Yep. All right, continue.
We're not in executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I asked for a roll call vote on my motion to adjourn.
Now, pause it for 1 second. Now, my understanding is that a motion to adjourn has precedence or priority, that it must be addressed. And so that's why Blumenthal is pushing this. And you could hear Leahy talking to Grassley, like, you got to do that. You got to have this vote, et cetera, et cetera. Continue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn. I ask for a roll call vote.
We're not in executive session. We will continue as planned.
Mr. Chairman, may I be recognized, sir? Mr. Chairman, I appeal to the chair to recognize myself or one of my colleagues.
You're out of order.
Mr. Chairman, I appeal to be recognized on your sense of decency and integrity. Even the documents you have requested, Mr. Chairman, even the ones that you said, the limited documents you have requested, this committee has not received. And the documents we have, you, sir, have
Chairman,
labeled
I'd
committee
ask for
confidential.
Regular order.
They should be transparent. This committee, sir, is a violation of even the values I've heard you talk about time and time again, the ideals that we should have. What is the rush? What are we trying to hide by not having the documents out front? What is the rush? What are we hiding by not letting those documents come out? Sir, this committee is a violation of the values that we as a committee have striven for, transparency. We are rushing through this process in a way that is unnecessary. And I appeal for the motion to at least be voted on.
Mr. Chairman.
At least let's have a vote, because when we wrote you a letter on August 24th,
Senator,
asking to have a meeting on this issue, you denied us even the right to meet. So here we are, having a meeting. Let's at least debate this issue. Let's at least call this for a vote. I appeal to your sense of fairness and decency, your commitments that you've made to transparency. This violates what you have even said and called for, sir. You've called for
even your low standards,
you yourself,
Chuck.
Limited documents. We thought there should be more. We have not received the documents that you have even called for. So, sir, based upon your own principles, your own values, I call for at least to have a debate or a vote on these issues and not for us to rush through this process.
Pause it. Now, what you could hear a tapping throughout that, that is Chuck Grassley slowly banging his gavel.
Blood from a stone, darling.
There's, you know, look, this is theater to a large extent, but... to a large extent, that's what hearings are. And they're competitive theater. It's like theater sports, but sometimes not as funny, although I've seen some pretty bad theater sports performances as well. All right, continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, I've heard calls for
order. I'd like to respond to Senator Booker. Senator Booker, I think that... I respect very much a lot of things you do, but you spoke about my decency and my and You spoke about my decency and integrity, and I think you are taking advantage of my decency and integrity. So.
What?
Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Nobody could do such a thing. It's okay.
Now, does this go on? Do we have more? Okay. Because what you're watching at the very least is a half a dozen or so of the Democrats on the judiciary, and I think there's 9 total. And Hirono comes up next. Maybe there's 10 total. You're watching them work in coordination, at least. Dianne Feinstein came and sort of put a little bit of a damper on things, which if I was Kevin DeLeon right now, I would be talking about. I would be, my entire comms team would be putting out, what is Dianne Feinstein doing? You know. And at the very least, you're seeing them in a coordinated effort to convince those red state Democrats that the procedure is messed up, right? Because that's the only way they're going to stop this process, is to make it on procedural grounds as opposed to ideological grounds. And so at least there is some effort being made here. I don't know that there's much that can happen because of the Moon in Lake Michigan principle. None of this is real, and you're all imagining it.
But you're cowards.
Right. But this is the reality of where we're at this point. Then we see Dick Durbin at these Kavanaugh hearings. Again, this is all from basically the opening. Once things start moving, Dick Durbin then chimes in with another element, right? We've heard from members of the committee who are complaining about the lack of documents, complaining about the delivery of the documents. I mean, the idea that you'll get 40,000 documents delivered 12 hours before the hearing seems rather transparently an attempt to say, we delivered the documents. If you didn't read them, it was your fault because you don't.
That's how I used to turn in my homework in college.
Exactly. But here's Dick Durbin reminding people that Neil Gorsuch should not be on this, or if anybody should be sitting in that seat, it should be Neil Gorsuch, because Neil Gorsuch should not have been able to fill the slot that Merrick Garland should have filled.
Mr. Chairman, we waited for more than a year with a vacancy on the Supreme Court under the direction of your leader in the United States Senate, and the Republic survived. I think the treatment was shabby of Merrick Garland and President Obama's nominee. The fact that we cannot take a few days or weeks to have a complete review of Judge Kavanaugh's record is unfair to the American people. It's inconsistent with our responsibility under Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution to advise and consent on Supreme Court nominees.
Again, this is all about making the case to those red state Democrats that procedurally, this is messed up. And look, here's the bottom line. There's no political scientist who would suggest that any of these red state Democrats are going to pay a price for stopping this nomination. I mean, you could also just look, case in point, to what the Republicans did in regards to Merrick Garland. They paid no price to even avoiding having hearings. So this is where we are. Is this the moment where Grassley talks about the documents? Is this the new one or number? He sent you the new one.
I think it's in the IMs, right?
Okay, so this is a new one. This is you had the Bush legal team hand over about 40,000+ documents 12 hours ago, maybe now 14 hours ago, 15 hours ago. The Trump administration claimed executive privilege on over 100,000 pages of documents from his record at the White House. An astonishing number of documents that really should, in many ways, say, you know, you can't, it completely disqualifies this guy. Because these are all documents about torture that he testified in public about already. So these go to the heart of his veracity in his last testimony in front of a Senate judiciary hearing to sit on the federal bench. But here is Chuck Grassley bragging about how many documents have been produced. And Cory Booker, to his credit, says, I think your metric is not exactly the right one.
I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of
Mr.
Judge.
Chairman.
No, this is not it. It's the other one.
And I will speak to the fact about 42,000 pages. Last night, we received additional documents for the committee's review. These were documents we requested before the hearing, and we received them before the hearing just as we requested. The majority staff began reviewing the documents as soon as they arrived and has already completed its review. There is thus absolutely no reason, delay the hearing.
Okay, that is not the clip, but the point is that Grassley was making an argument that we have already gotten hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. But as Booker says, in a different clip, this represents only a small percentage of what we required. And that's what's really operative here. You know, we will see what happens with the questioning. We will see if there is anything in those 42,000 pages. I would imagine, hopefully, that there are teams of lawyers looking at this stuff as quickly as they can. This is when you basically, hopefully, have access to outside lawyers that can come in. But this is what you need big firms for, where they have a sea of guys who are capable of doing this kind of work.
Is this making you think a little bit about the way the Democrats handled the whole Merrick Garland thing?
Well, I don't know what the Democrats could have done differently. I think Barack Obama should have nominated, after Merrick Garland was clearly not going to get a hearing, Barack Obama should have pulled his nomination and it should have nominated a series of people to make the Republicans deny each one of them a vote. I would have nominated, there was a couple of nominees that were suggested at the time. I can't recall who they were, but I would have nominated an African-American woman, and I would have nominated perhaps an Asian-American, and I would have basically gone through every voting block that supports Democratic voters, electeds, and I would have made the Republicans deny each one of them a hearing. That's what I would have done. But the Democrats, there was really nothing else that they could do.
What about the recess appointment idea, right?
The recess appointment idea was not possible because there was no resort. The court struck it down. And so there was no opportunity to do anything at that point. I don't think they did enough politically, but the problem is the left doesn't pay enough of attention. And I'm not talking about the Democrats per se. The left, broadly speaking, does not think the Supreme Court matters. And yeah, there you have it.
I mean, I'm paying attention now, so.
Right. I understand. But we needed years ago the left to pay more attention to the importance of the federal judiciary. Well, right as of now, Donald Trump, 1 in 7 of circuit judges who do most of the rulings, circuit courts, right? Because most stuff doesn't make it to the Supreme Court. 1 in 7, think about this, after 2 years of the Trump administration, are populated by Trump nominees.
There were two reasons. I mean, I don't know, whatever, relitigating. But from a left perspective, it was like the courts, number one, and the Iran deal. You didn't really need anything else. You didn't need anything else.
No.
That was it. The whole conversation and all of the melodrama and all of the wasted time could have been ended if you just, if people could have understood the concepts of Supreme Court and federal courts, and he can unilaterally destroy the best diplomatic breakthrough we've had in really like modern politics.
And last week, while we were on vacation, there was a deal struck to, en masse, confirm 15 of these judges. Fifteen nominees. These are lifetime federal court seats. McConnell had lined up votes for all the district court nominees last week. Normally, Senate rules require up to 30 hours of waiting time for each nominee. Democrats typically take advantage of this, right? It delays action on confirming the judges. It ties up the Senate. They can't do as much work. Chuck Schumer cut a deal with McConnell on Tuesday of last week to bypass the wait times and let them all get through. This is a classic quid pro nihil, where you give something and get nothing. That's what this deal is. Incidentally, I will tell you, super easy to make deals if the deal is, I'm going to give you what you want, and then you're going to get what you want. Very easy to make that type of deal. The theory is that Democrats could get back to campaigning and focusing on winning re-election in November. Senate is now out of session until Tuesday of this week. So that was to give Democrats more time to campaign. Now, theoretically, right, Republicans wouldn't have had time to campaign either. There are more Democrats up for re-election. But this is just absurd. It's just absurd. Now, with that said, any single Democrat or non-Democrat, Bernie Sanders, could have said, okay, I'm not going to provide unanimous consent and stop this deal. So I don't know. I haven't read anything that gives, a clear indication of how this went down or why, but it is what it is. I don't know that it would have impacted the Kavanaugh hearings at all, but, we just have a failure up and down the line from both like bottom up and top down failure to activate around these issues.
Well, a quick counterpoint to what you said before about Merrick Garland. I think the Democrats perhaps should also be listening to the left a little more on some of this stuff. Like the Republicans always pander to the base, which is not centrist, but fairly far to the right. When they, like, Trump promised to overturn Roe versus Wade, and Obama starts his compromises in the middle. He nominates a centrist, and
who would you have preferred Barack Obama to have nominated? Angela Davis. No, wait a second. But here's the point: you don't have a name. And so the left is
It's not my job to nominate judges.
No, it's not your job to nominate judges. But I mean, if you don't have one name of a left-wing judge who you would like to see on the bench, the failure is not just from the Democrats, because they can get away with it because you don't know either. So the failure, like I say, is not just top-down. It is bottom-up. If the left doesn't have the right, they know. They know the names of all their judges. They are lined up, and they are all there. And they're out there. The left does not have this because the left does not take the judiciary as seriously. That's not an indictment of you. It's an indictment of all of us. And that's just the reality of it. Merrick Garland would have made it. There is already multiple things I can tell you that Merrick Garland would not have voted in the way that Gorsuch did. And I don't know, and I certainly, you know, have judges I would have liked to see on the bench appointed. When Goodwin Liu was brought in front of for a federal judiciary, there was no great outcry from anyone in the left that this guy was getting hammered and denied. So those were the tests on some level, probably from the Obama administration. Like, how much is this going to make a difference?
How did the anybody left?
I'm
so
sure there are wonks on the left, though, who would give you lots and lots of names if Obama wanted to be more ideological about it and play to the base of the Democratic Party that does not care about norms
the base
and judicial
of
restraint.
The Democratic
they care
Party
about rights.
Didn't do anything when Goodwin Liu was up there. And if you can name a more left-wing judge than that, then I'm open to it. But you don't even know the guy's name. So it didn't play to the base. It doesn't make a difference to the base. That's my point.
I think it would if they made that their strategy, though, don't you think? Like, they care about human rights. They care about abortion. They care about unions. They don't care about most of the centrist shit that Obama was selling it on.
I guess. But Merrick Garland would not have voted with the majority in Janus. And that, you know, like, that's the biggest union case that has come along in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. I don't know what to tell you. Like, that case hung in the balance. Everything else, you know, in terms of unions is going to be legislative. That Janus case, like, if that, there it is.
I'm just saying, if
the everybody knew because of Friedrich. Everybody knew that case was going to come back. Everybody knew it. So you can speculate that the left would have been up in arms if they thought that case was, that unions hung in the balance. But unions did hang in the balance. It was quite obvious. And there was nothing from the left. The left has a problem that they do not appreciate the importance of the courts in our system. It's just the reality. It's the truth. And believe me, it's incredibly depressing to me because it's like, I consider that in part one of my failures. And I think and I don't know how that complacency came about. I think it's, I think we will probably have another era where we understand it, because when President Bernie Sanders takes the oath of office and tries to push forward very progressive legislation, and each one of them gets shot down by the 5-4 conservative Supreme Court, maybe 6-3 by the time we get to President Sanders, then I think the left will begin to reawaken to the importance of the courts.
I'm just saying, if it's your goal to have a judge that's as progressive as possible, wouldn't you want to overshoot the mark a little bit, and then maybe who you end up with is Merrick Garland?
I don't think that was Barack Obama's goal. I mean, I'm not. I think Barack Obama wanted a center left, more center than left, but center left judge to replace Scalia. I think that is the nature of Barack Obama.
Yeah, that's
extremely cautious.
Also a problem, but
I,
no, your
totally
point,
agree.
Your point is well taken. I mean, I will talk
But there
to...
is no, but the fact that Barack Obama is a centrist is not proof that putting up a Goodwin Liu, like he did earlier in his term for a federal judiciary, is going to get the left to even blink. Because they didn't.
When you think about it in the context of the way the right turns out for just guns and abortion, the left has nothing like that.
Nothing like that.
And it's true too that on that in just even in right-wing grassroots, there's an infinite more awareness and sophistication about the court and who's in the pipeline.
And the problem, too, I would add, is the right has the Federalist Society. The left was hoping that the American Constitution Society would be it. But what ended up happening is that nobody came to the defense of the Goodwin Lewis who were coming through that process. And then that became a liability that you were associated with the ACS as a nominee. I mean, it's a problem. It's a real problem. And I think, sadly, it may take, you know, another 20 or 30 years of not being able to pass, of getting any progressive legislation to be found to be constitutional before the left cares about courts.
That was one of the things that was so incredible, though, about the, you know, the incredibly stupid arguments that we heard about Lake Michigan and everything, because it was like the part that people like that are correct about is that the Democratic leadership can be incredibly ineffective and feckless. And the idea was like, oh, well, after this catastrophe happens, all of a sudden they're going to get incredibly tough. And
yeah,
ruthless.
Of course.
Like, oh, yeah, that's right when they've been completely wiped out and they're completely rudderless is when all of a sudden they're going to like discover just like how to be aggressive and strategic. And all of a sudden they're going to like throw the kitchen sink. I mean, it's just it's such a fantasy across
well,
the board.
Here's another question. If the left got active around the issue of judges, do you think that the leadership of the Democratic Party would listen if
yes.
we had another Democrat for president?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Well, maybe we will.
I hope so. All right. Here is a couple of things that we can look forward to from a Kavanaugh tenure on the court if the Democrats somehow are not able. And I honestly, you know, I don't know how they would be able to stop them, but who knows? You know, the problem is not just poor leadership, although I do think Chuck Schumer is not a very good, is not very smart about these things, and is not very good about making it the issue that it should be. Here is Lindsey Graham saying just a couple of days ago that he thinks Brett Kavanaugh could overturn the precedent of Roe v. Wade. I would guess that they will never do a head-on overturning. They will just change the level of scrutiny, laws that inhibit a woman's right to choose, change the level of scrutiny as to what passes a threshold. Basically make the threshold wider, I guess, or lower, and there'll be more laws that can inhibit a woman's right to choose. But here's Lindsey Graham.
Here's what I hope he'll do. If there's a case before him that challenges Roe v. Wade, that he would listen to both sides of the story, apply a test to overturn precedent. Precedent is important, but it's not inviolate. I'm dying to see if he believes that Citizens versus United can be overturned.
You're saying you don't view his statement, for instance, as Senator Collins, a pro-choice Republican, that it's settled law, means that therefore it can't be reexamined and conceivably overturned.
He would be disqualified, in my opinion, if he would not listen to both sides of the story. He will give great deference, I'm sure, to Roe v. Wade, but it can be overturned like every other decision.
So there he is. I mean, there's on a couple of two different, I think, shows, CNN and Fox, making the same argument. And this is probably in anticipation of giving Kavanaugh some breathing room. Right. I mean, this is Lindsey Graham either reiterating in public what he's had conversations with Kavanaugh in private, or also offering essentially talking points that it would be disqualifying not to consider the overturning of any precedent at any time.
It's a good strategy. Just warn of the really bad thing. And when you do the just like sort of half level bad thing, then people can't react as negatively against
it. What Lindsey Graham is doing here is he's saying, as a matter of principle, you should be able to overturn precedent. So if Kavanaugh says, he's basically saying, I'm throwing down the gauntlet and jujitsuing any attempt to get anybody to force Kavanaugh to vow not to overturn precedent so that he can say, actually, I would never make that vow about anything because, and that's why Lindsey Graham brings up Citizen United, because that's not appropriate for a judge to do. And he's like, you know, that it's actually, and Lindsey Graham's saying, like, I would vote against somebody simply because they refuse to even entertain the idea of reexamining precedent. So this is the way that they push this ball forward. What is, you know, shocking to me at different times is why this Kabuki theater? Like, who is this for at this point, right? Like, who is this for? Who doesn't know exactly where this ends?
Maybe just smokes, midterm smoke screening.
Maybe.
Their Collins families. And Murkowski.
Their families.
They have, right. Like, dumb family members.
Right. It's just like, hey, they're just constantly.
It is to give Collins and Murkowski. You're right. To give them a talking point when they go back home. Like Lindsey Graham said, I mean, you can't say to a judge, don't re-examine precedent, because there's a lot of precedents. I'd like them to re-examine.
And by the way, it can be any precedent.
Citizen United.
Maybe we got to look into the Janus case.
Yes, I mean, all of these things, they float that as a, I mean, that's the theory. Here is Brett Kavanaugh back in 1998, fresh off of his investigation and leaking of aspects of that investigation of Bill Clinton, president of the United States during the 90s, you'll recall. Here is Kavanaugh, at this point, a former former investigator of the Whitewater Independent Council, which ultimately you found nothing out of Whitewater. In fact, they got the president impeached upon a crime that happened 2 years after the start of the investigation into Whitewater. Now, is this Arthur Miller? Is this one of those roundtables that he used to do? Because I used to watch these all the time. Here it is.
Well, I think that last comment raises the question whether the president is subject to criminal indictment at all, which is a question that has been a lurking constitutional issue for a long time, and which at some point here should be resolved so that we can determine whether the Congress or an independent counsel should investigate the president when his conduct is at issue. I tend to think it has to be the Congress because of the kind of attacks that we've seen recently and because of the types of issues that were just pointed out. It is war, and if it's going to be war, it's got to be Congress, not an isolated prosecutor appointed by a panel of three judges we've never heard of.
I'd like to just take a little hand vote. How many of you believe, as a matter of law, that a sitting president cannot be indicted during the term of office? Just raise it up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yep, they all raised their hand. I mean, that is, I don't think, a terribly uncontroversial position that, relatively speaking, in terms of the ability of a president to be indicted as a sitting president, the one that you need Congress to investigate exclusively, a president seems a little bit dubious and certainly problematic if Brett Kavanaugh is going to be sitting on a case that involves the president. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. We've got clips from Tucker Carlson. We've got folks are burning their Nike sneakers and cutting off the logos of their Nike socks. We have done a special M-Team investigation into the sock question.
Yep.
And Brendan will be here with a report on the socks. Both the implications of cutting the tops of your socks off and what happens if you switch to, let's say, an Adidas pair of socks.
Oh.
Yeah. That'll all come down. Also, you know what? Let me address this now. We're going to hold off on this for a moment. Over the course of the week, Milo Yiannopoulos was bumped from Politicon. And it's actually pretty funny what he wrote.
Wah, wah.
Oh, it's really sad. Have you heard this? Have you read this?
I haven't, but I'm anticipating wah, wah.
So Milo Yiannopoulos, do you put this up on the screen, wrote this on his Facebook page after he was kicked out of Politicon. Politicon is this like Comic-Con for folks essentially like me. Like, it's for YouTube people and other like pundits to gather and go on panels and debate. And I definitely think it's something that is, and I've certainly said this in the past, that it's something that is problematic insofar as it makes our politics more about entertainment than anything else. Here is Milo Yiannopoulos's concern. And I want to return to this because I was invited to Politicon again this year, and this year I accepted. But I'm going to return to that in a moment. So Milo Yiannopoulos said this, and I'm going to play this music underneath it. Oh, shoot. You're going to have to pull it up, pull up some music. Get me the rose, if you will. Over the past 3 years, I've spent literally millions of dollars trying to do talks, speeches, events, rallies, and protests, to say nothing of all the stuff I do behind the scenes I can never tell you about.
I believe that.
Now, what he doesn't say is that it's his millions of dollars. It was probably Rebecca Mercer's millions of dollars, but yes. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I
spent somebody's millions of dollars.
And you got to grade him on a curve.
Exactly. A lot of that money was my own wealth from before I even started in journalism. I find that hard to believe.
Really relatable, too.
My events.
Very grounded.
Almost never happen. It's protests or sabotage from Republican competitors or social media outcries. What's that German word for stab in the back? Gewürschenfelten?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm feeling some Schadenfreude.
Every time it costs me tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, I got to tell you, I don't know why they say Republicans are good at business, but if you're going to lay out hundreds of thousands of dollars for a speaking engagement, you might want to reconsider the way you're running your business. And when I get dumped from conferences, all caps, barely anyone makes a sound about it. Not my fellow conservative media figures, and not even, in many cases, you guys. When was the last time any of you protested in the street at the treatment meted out to me or Pamela Geller or Mike Cernovich or Alex Jones? I have repeatedly put myself in harm's way in service of American values. My annual security bill amounts to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Shout out to Antifa.
Where was his security detail when he went into that bar? Wouldn't you, like, that's, like, when do you need a security detail for hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Yeah, that was the dangerous yelling that the DSA kids were doing.
Just so my husband and I don't get killed going for sushi. I have to make that money somehow just to stay afloat, and that doesn't scratch the surface of the staff costs, insurance, your insane American taxes. Like, what country did this dude come from that our taxes seem insane? From, are taxes lower in Great Britain?
Greece, or where is he?
I don't know.
I don't care.
I've fought bitterly and endlessly for freedom in a country I don't even belong to. Well, then get out!
Yeah. Leave.
Immigrant.
Stop criticizing our tax system. You're not an American.
God. Not for my benefit, but for yours. I've been betrayed and abandoned by everyone who ever called themselves my friend.
The melodrama is very authentic.
Small handful of notable exceptions.
Sorry.
I was a significant factor in Donald Trump getting elected, for which I have received zero credit. I almost single-handedly ignited the current debate about free speech on campus, and in caps, no one has ever matched my ability to draw attention to these issues. For my trouble, I have lost everything standing up for truth in America. Spent all my savings, destroyed all my friendships, and ruined my whole life. At some point, you realize it's occasionally better to spend the money on crabs and cocktails.
Yes.
Right. So that should be an early recognition, yep. Dude.
If anyone has a problem with that, then frankly, they can go F themselves.
That's the first thing I don't have a problem with, dude.
All I ever read here is criticism and ingratitude. You guys have no idea what I've sacrificed for you. And you think just because I drown my sorrows with a few expensive bottles of wine, you're justified in calling me lazy and self-involved? Well, things have turned dark. I don't advertise my selflessness because I'm not a victim, despite everything I have written above. Please disregard above into making that assessment. But for the love of God, show some recognition of what your frontline warriors have accomplished on
your
behalf.
The tier one operator is Milo.
He's looking distinctly tier two right now, buddy.
You entitled fucking babies. All caps, you will keep losing until you support those of us out there on the front lines while you tweet Facebook from your living rooms.
That's an interesting choice there, because I would have thought it would have ended from your parents' basement. But he stayed at living rooms, perhaps in an attempt to not entirely alienate the base that he feels so hurt by. I remember a time when Milo clearly hated the fact that the only reason he was successful was because a bunch of like creepy college kids liked him, and now he's tumbling so far that he resents that those very same losers won't show up for
him. That's right.
Sad.
Long gone are the days where he would print out like and take Twitter pictures of his like $10,000 dinner bills.
Remember, sad. Remember when people were worried that getting his book canceled was going to make him a martyr?
Right. To a certain extent, the thing that brought him down was the pedophilia stuff, right? I mean, so it's hard to sort of disaggregate exactly what, but there is some data out there that shows that, like, Alex Jones, when he's deplatformed, it hurts. Now, here's the thing about Politicon. So I want to talk to folks and give my thinking. And, I mean, I'm open to not going, but I've thought about this as to the value of it. And, you know, like I say, in years past, I have not answered, not even responded to emails about this. But largely speaking, largely because of what's going on in YouTube and my feelings that we on the left are highly uncompetitive. We are just simply not even there. We're not there in any type of meaningful way. Obviously, Young Turks are have a large presence. We have a decent sized presence. Kyle Kalinske's show is quite big, and Pac-Man's show, but this is nothing compared to what's out there for young teens, young girls, young boys, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 25-year-olds. I mean, they're just inundated. And on some level, I keep saying that the left has to engage on this platform across the board. Not just the left, but even the center left has to engage on these platforms. And so the question is don't go to Politicon and just ignore it, and it's not going to go away. It's going to grow. It's going to be, provide for them the value that a CPAC does on some level. And then the question for me is, well, what can I actually achieve there? And they wanted me to debate Milo, and I said, no, who cares about him? The guy is over. And that was, initially. I'm not going to say who I asked to debate because I don't want to prevent that from happening. in any way. But my feeling is that there may be an opportunity for me to go and debate people that I don't have the opportunity to debate in any other forum. And if I can debate them there and discredit them, because these debates, obviously, they get put online. And so a lot of people see them. A lot of people who haven't, you know, who are not in attendance at the conference, which I think is largely right leaning. And so I am fairly confident that I can debate one of these people and inhibit their trajectory in some fashion.
They should play that under bed, some Rocky music under it before you come out.
Right.
That sound really, I like the momentum. I am fairly confident that I can inhibit their trajectory to some degree.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun. You know.
Right. Well, I don't want to, you know, be explicit. I mean, I, you know, I don't, but that is, I think, the value of
I want to do a regular bit with Eye of the Tiger music and Sam pumping himself for debates.
You know, the libertarians, we don't hear from them very much. They don't call into the show. I don't think I think the movement itself has stagnated. I don't think that is a I think that's a function of what's going on in the broader political universe. But I like to think that at least online, that in some way, the debates that we've had here have at least preoccupied them. We've had callers call in say that they have turned away from libertarianism after, you know, listening to this show and watching some of those videos. So I think there's value there.
Most of them are anarcho-socialists or Nazis now, right? One or the other.
Right, exactly. And but I am open to counter arguments. And so if you have one, you know, obviously call in or tweet at me with them, because, you know, there's arguments out there that we shouldn't perform, you know, participate in these things. But, you know, if I had the ability to deplatform someone by not participating, I would do that, but I don't. I'm not going to be deplatforming any of these people if I don't go. And I don't think that I am in a position where I am, you know, pulling someone out of obscurity and raising them up. I have a notion of where I am in the pecking order of these things. And for the most part, anybody I would debate, I would imagine, has a bigger audience than I do. And so that's what goes into my calculation. But again, I am open to any other.
It's fucking you and Lula, dude. It's pure courage.
Well, I'm just
playing. No, it's great. You should go and you should take one of these, you know, whatever moron they put up against you, you'll take them
slow
down a notch.
The trajectory.
Slightly inhibit their trajectory in a modest way that perhaps might be effective in the.
If you can put a mark on their social blades.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
That would be beautiful. That's actually a very concrete metric.
I articulated a different way around the office, but we'll discuss it. We'll discuss that at a later time.
Nice.
Folks, just a reminder, it is your support that makes the show possible. I hope folks like the vacation. I got a lot of talk about the mesmerism stuff.
Fast. That was really interesting.
Your support helps us maintain the show every day. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off your blend. You can also get the Majority Report blend. They are our oldest, most dearest sponsors of this program. Also, tonight is Tuesday, which means, unless I'm mistaken, that the Michael Brooks Show happens tonight. Is that right, Michael?
We are back from vacation. And we are going to be covering, we're going to have a take that connects the John McCain funeral and the failing Emmanuel Macron government in France. Ken Klippenstein, who's an investigative journalist for TYT and the Daily Beast, is going to be on as a guest. He has some new reporting showing even deeper links with the U.S. support of what Saudi is doing in Yemen and a bunch of other stuff. We're live at 7. And this last illicit history we did was unlocked, and it was on the Turkish and U.S. potential global economic meltdown because of a pissing contest between Trump and Erdogan that starts with Mike Pence putting out an ominous music video threatening Turkey because a pastor has been arrested there.
Mm.
This is the type of thing that could literally melt down the economy, and but gives you a good kind of primer of what's happening in Turkey.
And Jamie, back from vacation, the Antifada.
Hell yeah. So we were in Fire Island this past week, swimming nice. And eating and drinking and psychonauting or whatever. But we did manage.
Wait, what? What was the last one?
You don't know what that is?
Psychonauting?
Never mind. We took a little walk down the hallways of hallways.
Like
it was great.
What it does is it slightly inhibits.
Oh, psychonauting.
Slightly inhibits the trajectory of your ego.
I understand what you're saying.
Indeed. So, but anyway, we had a lot of requests. We did a survey. People were into, yes, exactly. People were into the idea of some standalone episodes by individual ones of us. So Sean dropped a hot solo track about historical materialism because we talk about it a lot, but we don't really explain it. It's very funny. I heard him recording it while I was cleaning the beach house. Yesterday.
Nice.
And I did an interview with my friend Nora Singh from the band Hit Bargain. We talk about situationism, radical feminism, punk rock. It's great. And then Andy.
Situationism.
Yeah.
That sounds
like Guy Debord and Latrice.
Indeed. Indeed. She's carrying it forward into the 21st century.
She would enjoy a bad situationist.
Maybe.
Has she seen it? She didn't like it?
I don't know if she knows about it. I'll send it to her.
She would get the references.
Oh, definitely. And then Andy did an interview with some anarchist activists about the national prison strike. So, coming up, folks.
All right. And
boat.
There was a new literary hangover. It wasn't a fiction storybook this time. We did a history by Bernard Baylin. The Barbarous Years, the Peopling of British North America, the Conflict of Civilizations, 1600 to 1675. Me, Alex, and New Guy Chris appeared on that.
So. New Guy Chris?
Where did you get New Guy Chris from? Did you just pull
what's
him out
going
of the
on?
Bar? What's up?
New Guy Chris, well, I don't want to go too deep into it, but now he has a job that he wanted to stay undercover, and now he's less concerned about that sort of thing. So
interesting.
Also, just been announced that former U.S. Senator John Kyle will be McCain's successor in the U.S. Senate. He was the guy who was tapped to guide Brett Kavanaugh through the Senate, and he was addressed all over the place. So, you know, as he was introduced to all the different senators, and so there you go, John McCain. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing that fire hose that apparently had no water in it and, in fact, was not even hooked up to a hydrant.
Just more gasoline.
It was just exactly. All right. Quick break. Head into the fun half. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.